Following is a Skutch Media production.
Dude, your story's incredible,
I'm good,
pal.
I'm good, man.
Your story's incredible.
You know, I could sit here and do this all day.
So he would just literally be there to just box out and beat the shit out of
me. Man, he would protect me on the court. When someone touched me, he's like, Jermaine, bring him this way.
So there's literally enforcers just like hockey.
Yeah, that's who he was for me.
Bring Mike a little closer to you, just a tiny bit.
I was like Wayne Gretzky, and he was my bodyguard on the court.
So best enforcer you ever had?
Had to be him. Larry
that was
Brown.
Just college. That was college
that
ball
was college.
Too.
Yeah, yeah, Larry Brown.
Got to be honest, I'm a little nervous. I'm a little nervous because you're my first actual
basketball player.
Well, basketball player, but professional level, like sports entertainment. Yeah, my first ever professional. Right. So I didn't want to cut into basketball, my friend, because you honestly are my first ever
professional. Period.
Professional. Right. You're my first ever actual really accomplished. More than I have 100,000 on my Instagram and this, which I'm very happy for. I love you all, but guys, without further ado, you know him as the Thrilla from Camilla. I know him as a gentle, loving man that I cannot wait to dig into because this guy's insane. Jermaine Jones, everybody. Jermaine Jones.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for having me, man. Pleasure being here.
I am, like I said, I'm a little starstruck. You know what I'm saying? And here's the funny thing. I don't know shit about basketball. I worked for the Madison Square Garden Company, no shit. And I had to go to my boss at one point and go explain a triple-double. And
really?
He said, "You gotta go." I said, "I know hockey. Like I know other stuff."
Man, you sound like me. You sound like me at a volleyball game.
Yeah, I do a little. What's the name of the player with a different jersey on?
What is that called?
It's something with a B.
See, I don't know.
Bandoleras, something like that.
I can't remember the name, but I know my daughter's not that.
I was watching that one day going, why does that person have a different jersey?
I know they're always shorter than most of the players.
Well, they're usually, I think, that your best setup and bump person, and they know that they can't go past just the line.
Right.
So they can't like be a blocker or as... Dude, I don't know shit about volleyball, bro. I swear to God, I don't know shit about volleyball. But I watched this one day, and I looked it up. I'm like, oh, a bandolero or something like that. But
right.
So your daughter plays.
Yeah. Well, I got two daughters that play.
So let's get into that then. Tell me about you, man. Tell me about Jermaine. Like,
well, I'm born and raised in a small town called Cocoa, Florida. It's probably about 15 minutes from Cape Canaveral. You know, people call us crazy because they say all the debris that used to come down from the space shuttle landed on us. So they thought everybody in this small town was crazy.
It's the Roswell of Florida, everybody. It's the Roswell of Florida.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Cocoa, Florida, raised by a single mom. Dad was never around. Drug-infested neighborhood. We was probably ranked number 15 in the state in murder rates.
Jesus.
You know, coming up, you know, in that neighborhood, and me myself at 13 years old, I witnessed a murder. And, you know, during that time, you didn't really want to talk about that. You know, you come up missing, you know, back during the time that I was there. So my mom made a decision to move me to the small town of Camilla, Georgia with her sister, and who really, you know, was a real big impact in my life. She was on 140 acres of land. We took care. She had actually everything on her land: peanuts, pecans, watermelons, cantaloupes, whatever you name, we had it. And we had to take care of the farm, and we had to take care of other people's farm. So I guess that's where you can say I got my work ethic from.
You're a farmer. You're a farm boy.
Country boy is what they say.
Country boy. Look at that.
Yeah.
We have something, because I grew up in Tampa. I was born in New York, but grew up in Tampa. But, like, I always knew Coco for Ron John's Surf Shop. Well, and like,
well, that's the thing, too. Coco and Coco Beach is like night and day.
They're different. Really? Right. Oh, yeah.
Sorry, everyone. I didn't.
Yeah, Coco and Coco Beach are probably 14, 15 miles apart. And it's like night and day. You know, you go through Coco, man, people speed by there. That's how dangerous it used to be. Whoa. But you have to go through there to get to Coco Beach.
So, what? Wow, I didn't. Holy crap. So got you out of there, got you in Camilla. They're manning you up. You're working the fields.
Yeah.
Probably what great, you loved it.
No. not at
Absolutely
all.
Absolutely not.
You know, no, it's crazy because, you know, if anybody asked me where, you know, groceries come from, you know, I would have said the grocery store before, you know, me living with my aunt. But the first 2 weeks there, they was like, yeah, we're going to the fields at 6:30 in the morning. And I was thinking, like, it was somewhere fun, is what I thought. But, you know, once I got out there, it was like 6:30 in the morning. We would go all the way working until 6 p.m. in the evening time. And the first 2 weeks of working, I was calling my mom ready to come home.
Oh, so your mom didn't go. She just sent you.
Yeah. I'm like, Mom, I'm ready to come back home.
She's like, you're staying.
She was like, no, you're not coming back here. You're going to be there, and you're going to do whatever your aunt have you do, and you're going to have a better life there. Now, that's one of the best things she's ever done for me, to be able to get me out of the neighborhood that I went in, and my aunt was like military. You know, like,
here it comes. Now here comes the work ethic.
Her husband was the first black deputy sheriff in the state of Georgia.
Really?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So it was it was pretty strict in
intense.
It was pretty strict in the household, but you know, it was fun. You know, it was you know, like I said before, I got like 16 aunties and uncles and probably about a million first cousins. So all of my boy cousins, you know, always came out to work. And it had to be probably about 15 of us, you know, working, taking care of the farm. So
family workforce.
Yeah, that's what it was. You know, that's one thing that my family, all of them, like, hard workers. You know, we didn't have, you know, we, you know, grew up watching everybody work. So you didn't really have a choice but to fall in line, or, you know, you're going to be talked about a lot. And we don't really like that too much.
Well, it's funny. It's like, I think that's the thing we've lost nowadays, right? It's kind of like, there's a movie I like to quote sometimes. It's like, why isn't somebody stomping Private Pyle's guts out? Right? It's from Full Metal Jacket. It's like, right. Why are you allowing him to fall behind? And it's, I think, in that family type setting,
absolutely,
it's a good thing. Like, you're not, you're either, we have to do this, right? Like, it's like, you will help us through until you are not needed to help us through, until there's another generation to help us through. And absolutely, it's a good, it's building good character. It's character building type stuff.
It's different too, because these kids are so different nowadays. And I think it's more of the parents, and, you know, the parents want more for their kids than they had. And I think it's kind of, you know, making it tough. But, you know, the way I grew up in our family was that they made it tough for us, you know, like, to be able to have anything. Like, with us going to take care of other people's farms, we thought that we was getting paid. And my aunt used to be like, you ate last night, didn't you? You know what I mean? So she made it hard for us, even at home. Like, you know, you got to go out here and work to be able to earn this meal, this hot meal that you're going to get. You know, I know it sounds kind of harsh, but, you know, it really, you know, builds character and make you work and earn everything that it is. And it was weird because, you know, I tell parents all the time, like, we work so hard at home, like, everything that was outside of the house came easy to us. So me being this professional athlete, well,
it's like swinging a weighted bat before you step up to the plate.
Like, people's like, man, he's crazy. Why is he out here doing all of this kind of stuff, you know, at practices? And, you know, I'm lapping people in miles and I'm doing all of this stuff. But I was like, man, you should see what we're doing at home.
Go to the fields. This is a vacation.
Right.
This is vacation. Go to the fields. This is my auntie. Mm-hmm. She's going to be running pre-workout warm-ups. You fuckers are screwed. Right. You fuckers are screwed.
So it was funny, too, when I first got there, you know, I was excited to go to the field, which I had no clue what the field was.
I know.
So I go there, and they was like, well, you know, going to work. I say, cool. I say, I can earn some money. The new Jordan's about to come out. And all my cousins just laughing at me. They was like, man, yeah, okay, well, go ahead and, you know, pick which ones you want and when you're going to get them. They already knew that we weren't getting paid.
it was paying was like living.
Right.
And it's like nowadays you look, it's like not just living. And when we like, I remember my mom saying like, oh, you have cell phones just like, I guess I was in college when they really started, everybody didn't have like a bag phone.
Right.
Or like the rich people, like, that dude's got a phone in his car. Right. Remember that shit?
Dude's got a phone in his car. Right. The one of the. It was huge.
It was big as your forearm.
It probably weighed like
it was like holding a baby. Hello? Yes, this is a baby in my hand.
It was hilarious.
It was, and all of a sudden then they came out, then everybody had, but you had to, you had to pay. Like my mom was like, you gotta pay that.
Right.
Like, I'm not paying that. I'm not paying, like, you got a room and food. And then it was like,
that's it.
And you had to do, like, I remember I had to clean the pool, I had to do all this crap, and I was like, Jesus. And now looking back and I'm like, I get it, because like I don't mind doing it my own house. Like, it's like one of those things that, like, right. But it also, I think, it gives you that work ethic. And that's like extreme. Because you said to me when I first met you, it ain't hard to play in the NBA. And I will remember this. You're like, you have to be big and work hard. And I was like, come on, bro. But seeing now that we've talked about, we didn't get this deep when we first met.
Right.
I could see that, why that mentality in your head is just like, man, I just worked. I'm sure my friend. Like,
right. So, no, and the thing is too, you know, even my mom growing up, man, she was pretty intense herself. I don't know which was worse, because my mom's like this neat freak. Like she had to dust every day. And I'm like, how does dust accumulate every day? And it's like, I couldn't, you know, I always had to make my bed before I went to school. I had to go to school at 8 o'clock in the morning, but I had to clean my room and make sure everything was in place. And it was going to be tough on me if I got back home, and I would know if I had something out of place. So my mom was pretty strict on me. And, you know, I always had to work and keep, I always had chores. I had so much growing up in the household. So that's why, you know, when I talk with parents, like, you know, don't be your kid's friend. Like, you know, give them some value where, you know, they can go out and be able to accomplish something, because they're going to run into some things, you know, out in the world, and you want to prepare them for that. And I think, you know, with the work ethic that was instilled in me at such a young age, you know, everything outside of the house came easy for me.
We have something in common, because my father passed away when I was young, pretty young. So we both had just kind of single mother households. Mm. And I think that also forces you into certain stuff like that.
No, absolutely.
Right? Like, it's like, my mom's like, I can't physically do that. Right. Like, and you can, right? Right. Like, or... You know, and you just kind of look at it like, I can't afford to do that, so you have to. Like, I can't afford to have somebody pay 50, 60 bucks to mow the lawn. You have mm-hmm. to do it. Like, you have to do certain. It's like, I think that just kind of, you just, looking back on now, it's like, I didn't do enough.
Right.
Which is sad. Like, I like, man, I should, like, I remember when, after she died, there was we had a dishwasher. That one day we got in an argument about something, and she threw a can of Hunt's tomato sauce at me. And bro, like, sidearm, like Patrick Mahomes, you see, like that weird shit, like those, like that, like no look pass type shit, like, bro, with it, actually.
Wow.
And she hit. I jumped. Most athletic thing I've ever done.
I'm pretty sure.
And she put two dings in that dishwasher, and I was like, maybe I could get the cover of the dishwasher on the plane. I wanted that dented shit.
That is hilarious.
But that, I remember going, man, I could have done, right? And it's like, that's the stuff that brings you.
So
right?
Did that, like, scare you? Did that scare you at all?
When what? When she threw the... No, dude, I laughed. We laughed about it.
Really?
Like, no, man, because my mother, like, she was very, not aggressive, she's Italian. Right. Man, so like everything right. was, yeah. My grandfather used to tell me stories, no shit. His grandmother would come after him with a broom and he would dive under the stairs and she would try to gouge him.
Oh, really?
With the, not the fuzzy part, not the bristles, the stick. Underneath, he was like, she would try to like literally, and at the end of the night, when he would like say an hour later and he'd be like, go to bed, he'd have to go and be like, I love you, Mom, and give her a kiss.
Right.
And it was just like, it wasn't that, they never, it was a healthy fear, maybe.
Right.
Like, I loved my mother, like, do that, and she came over a table after me, but, I was laughing. Like, she's 5'2". Like, what is, like, and it's, I.
Really? You was laughing? I'll be 45 next month. I still scared shitless of my mom and my aunt.
Bro, there's a fear, but, like, that fear where, like, she was chasing me around a table. I'll show you the table later downstairs. She was chasing me around, and I was like, you can't get me. You're old.
Right.
And she came over. So at that point, I was just so shocked right. that this woman that was coming over the tower, I started laughing. Like, I couldn't. Like, it was one of those things where it's like, you got me. Like,
right.
But, yeah, I'm scared shitless. She was just terrible. She passed away 20 years ago. But, like,
I'm sorry to hear that.
That took, oh, man, that was, that's yeah. the worst. Like, Mom is,
right.
I just went through it with a buddy, and he was like, I feel like I lost like the love, like the first love, you know, that first yeah. love, bro. When you're like in your teens and it feels like someone just ripped your chest open. That's yeah. how it's horrible.
Man, I have two, actually one of the guys, D.A. Lane, that went to the University of Georgia with me, just lost his mom.
Oh.
And it was probably like 2 weeks later. One of the guys I played with in high school, he's the head coach at Willard High School. And he, lost his mom and just having a conversation with them, man, it was just like, man, I couldn't even imagine, you know, I couldn't even imagine what you have to go through, you know, during that time. And I don't know what to say. Like, what am I supposed to say? I never experienced it. I don't know how to talk to you about it. Like, hey, I'm here. Hey,
it's horrible, man.
Gotta get out of the house. Come, let's meet me at the golf course.
That's all you can say.
We went out. We were at a wedding, and we were sitting with the guy that he talked about his father passing away. And this guy was so almost crippled by that sorrow of it. Wow. Like, I was just like, bro, wait till Mom. Like, Mom is just like you said, and you were terrified right. of her. It's something about, like, man. The good moms out right. there, like they just, it's one of those things where you're terrified in the sense I don't want to fail you.
Right.
Yeah. It's not so much I'm afraid of
right.
you.
Right.
It's that look of.
Right. Yeah.
Peter. Jermaine. You didn't do it, Jermaine. Right. Like, I had better hopes than you. Like, that's just right. like.
Yeah, that's definitely a killer.
It's the worst. Worst. Let's move on to something a bit more cheerful. You're getting. You're in the fields. You're working with your cousins.
And that's cheerful?
No. I'm getting out of here. I'm moving out of here. You're in the fields. You start playing in high school? You start playing with your brother? How do you start playing?
Well, it's funny. I never liked basketball growing up in Florida because Florida's a football state.
It is.
So one of the things was... that got me into going to play. And I started late. I was 11 years old when I started playing basketball. So that's pretty late. That's middle school. So.
You've never played basketball before? Never,
no.
Just,
not,
wow.
Not
okay.
before that. So I go outside and all my friends at basketball practice. So I'm like, I guess I'll get out a shot.
Fuck it.
You're like, I want to hang out with my friends. I'll try this.
Yeah, so it was, you know, from the first day that I went to basketball practice, man, it was weird because I had this love for it from the first day I picked up a basketball. And I think it was more of my friends. You know how cruel kids can be.
Bro, are you kidding me?
They were like...
I grew up dyslexic. They kicked the shit out of me daily. Oh, God.
They were like, oh, you suck. You're this, you're that. And I think from that day also, I learned about my competitive nature. I didn't really like too much them picking on me and telling me how bad I was. So while they was playing the Nintendos and playing the Atari, I was at the gym every single day from the first day I went to basketball practice so I can get better. So every day while they were doing all the other stuff, I was at, because every time that I got on the basketball court, I wanted to make sure that I was better than I was the first time that I got on the basketball court.
Did you excel like X times faster than them?
I had to, because I was behind. I was behind. Everybody had been playing. You know.
He had to. He had no choice.
I really had to.
Kill or be killed.
Because I really didn't enjoy that. You know, that was one of the things, you know, growing up, man. You know, I was a jokester, so I didn't really like the jokes. You know, I had to, always had to have one up, you know, so basketball wasn't going to be the thing that you made jokes on me about. So I really took that in. And people always knew where I was. You know, it was only two places I was ever at. I was at the store making money, or I was at the gym getting better every single day. And I tell kids that all the time that, you know, whenever I do camps and stuff like that, they always say they want to make the NBA. And I was like, well, how often you go to the gym? And they was like, well, 3-4 times a week. I said, really? And you think you're going to make the NBA that way? And they was like, well, how often did you go? I say, well, I never missed a day out of the gym. I was that person that got there when they was rattling the keys to open up the gym. And the only reason I was leaving is because I had to be home before the street lights came on.
That's how my mom.
That was how they raised us.
That's how they raised us. Yeah. Be home when the lights are, or you're going to end up like Adam Walsh. You remember Adam Walsh? Scared the shit out of
right.
us. That's how he came home. You want to be like Adam Walsh? You better get home with those street lights. That's what they said.
You know how many basketballs I lost? Because I always had the best basketball. Oh. Always. Every Christmas, I got the best balls. And I always left them because I had to be home before the street lights came on. They was like, oh, one more game. But I wasn't missing that street light.
So they'd be in the middle of the game.
Yeah, I wasn't missing that street light.
No, bro. That's suicide.
And every time it was left there, I never seen it again.
How sad. And you wouldn't give up on that for that last game. Like, nah, I got 15, man. I got to go.
I got to get out of here.
And nobody else had a ball they could throw in.
I always had the best ball. Always.
I'd be like, hey, I gotta go. You gotta play with somebody else's ball. But you wouldn't allow that because you wouldn't allow to leave. That's a well-rounded guy. Speaking of, you played in the Goodwill games.
Yeah.
It's incredible, man.
That was an excellent experience, man, to be able to, you know, represent the country. And it was in New York. And it was the first time ever that I had to try out for something, you know?
Except for life.
You know what I mean? Because it was more of like, you know, I was always good. But then, you know, you having these tryouts and, you know, you got a guy like Sean Marion, who was like the number 9 pick in the NBA draft that got cut from this team. You know what I mean? So it was pretty intense. You know, the practices going in there, and we had to practice in Colorado. So you really had to be, yeah.
I could ski down this mountain. I'm out of shape.
Yeah,
be fine.
So the practice was really intense. So, you know, for me, that was probably one of the accomplishments that I had that I was most excited about, because I was representing my country, and then just the fact that the competition was so high. To be able to make that 12-team roster, you know, so I was really excited about that. And people forget, you know, when I tell people I'm a gold medalist, they like, man, get out of here. When did you win a gold medal?
You are. I'm picking up a little bit. You are fueled by that. I told you so.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, that's another thing you have in common.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love somebody to go, you can't do that.
Man, if I invest my time in anything, man, nobody can tell me, you know, what I can't, because I always feel that whatever you invest your time in is what you're going to be good at.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, even me going to the University of Georgia for 2 years, I had never had any intentions on leaving the University of Georgia early. I was having that much fun.
You told me that. I'm sure you were.
I was having
we only have like two
fun.
Hours, by the way. I'm sure you were. I don't even think we have time.
We was top five party schools every year. So, yeah, I was yeah, really,
and,
really.
And you were what?
I was really,
SEC sophomore top scorer, right? Yeah, I'm sure you were having a really great time.
Yeah, man, they was really friendly.
I'm sure they were. You know how they were to me? Not nice.
Not as friendly. Huh?
Not as friendly. It's funny. I'm sure you loved it.
Yeah, I had an excellent time there, man. I had no intentions on leaving school early, but that's what one of the things that got me to leave school early when the coach came in. You know, I played my first 2 years, and then they brought Jim Herrick in, and I sat down and had a talk with him. And, you know, one of the things I will always remember in my life when he told me, he said, "Jermaine, if you leave school right now, you'll be pumping gas in 10 years. And I had no intentions on leaving school. But for him to say that to me, I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm definitely leaving school now just because I want to prove you wrong.
And it's like you had obstacles. You had a baby on the way.
Yeah. I had my oldest daughter. She's 24 now. She's in her second year in dental school at Temple University. And one of the things I really wanted, and I could talk about this now because everybody's giving away money now.
We talked about the white envelopes.
No, because I really wanted to meet with the coach and let him know, like, hey, I got a kid on the way financially. I'm going to need some help. I don't know what alumni or whatever can do to be able to help me, but I don't want to leave school. I want to be here, but I got responsibilities. Can somebody promise me that they can help me with that? And that's what the conversation was about.
And was it that bluntly open? Just, hey, let's look.
I mean, I've always been transparent. You know, let's talk about what's going on right now. And the only reason I'm thinking about leaving is that
I have responsibilities.
That's it. That was all he had to say.
We got you, buddy. You kidding me? We'll take care of it. We got it.
All he had to do was not say what he said.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. All he had to do was the exact opposite of what he said.
Because we had to.
Well done, coach.
You know, because Donnell Harvey was the number one player in the country at the time. And he was from, you know, South Georgia. Randolph Clay is where he went to high school at. And he was coming to University of Georgia because I was there. We was high school rivals. And he already told me, like, hey, Jermaine, if you're staying in school, I'm coming. So we were going to be stacked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that was one of the things I always wanted to do.
And you would have had, like, 2 years with him.
I would have had 1 year at least.
1 year at least, yeah.
Yeah, because I was already projected to be a lottery pick if I would have left school that year, but – you know, I wanted to stay in school another year because I knew he was coming. Because I wanted to be in the tournament. I was always in the not in tournament. The NIT.
The not in tournament.
And in the NIT this year.
So I really wanted to, you know, get that opportunity to play, you know, in front of the world. To be able to, showcase my talent. And, you know, bringing Donnell Harvey at the University of Georgia. Would have been, I think that would have been it. We'd probably been competing for the title, to be honest, with me, him, and D.A. Lane, G.G. Smith. I think we'd had enough to be able to do something and make a run. But, you know, Jim Herrick.
He ruined it.
He ruined all of that. Jim? University of Georgia.
Jim? Is he still out there?
I didn't want to leave.
He didn't want to leave. I hope UGA, all the students... You heard it. One stupid comment, you'll be pumping gas. You're like, watch this. And then guess what? From pumping gas to the number 27th overall pick.
Yeah, absolutely. And probably the joy of that story is that when I was playing for the Lakers, he coached Lamar Odom at Rhode Island. Oh. And he was in the back. I guess Lamar had, you know, had him come to the game, and he was in the back with us. And he actually walked up to me and was like, "Jermaine, do you remember me?"
Oh boy, do I!
And I was like looking at him, and I was like, "Well, I'm gonna be nice to him." So I looked at him. I say, "Do I remember you?" I was like, "First of all, I just want to shake your hand." I say, "Because you're the reason I'm wearing this Laker uniform." And I just walked away from him, and I felt so good inside, like everything was tingling. I feel like I had just hit the lottery.
It's better than any food tastes. It's just better than I don't know. Right. Like there's not. I've done some substances, and it's better than that. That feeling, man. You know what I mean? Like I told someone to go fuck themselves once. Like, and I'm sorry for the language, but that was exactly what I said to them.
Really?
You can yourself.
Right.
And I called Marn afterwards, and she was like, "How do you feel?" I'm like, I got I've been reborn.
Right.
Al, I saw it. You had that steely eye. Like, yeah. I don't care. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And that gets you far in life,
yeah,
pal.
I feel good about it, man, but. But I was just thinking, like, who says that to a kid?
No one should say that.
I was 19 years old at that time.
And you had some, 19 years old, and you had some huge upcoming life choices happening.
Right.
All he had to do was just give you a little bit, like, Jermaine, the UGA family loves you and will take care of you.
That's it. And I would have been back in school.
What a different way. And he would have gotten the same result he wanted.
Yeah.
Why would you come? Why come at something? And there's not wrong with like, hey, pal, I really think you should finish out school. Well, of course, we'll always do everything we can to help you.
Right.
But I think you're going to get the best. It adds one more thing for you, pal.
Yeah.
You're good enough. It's going to be there.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, this guy.
That's it.
And he would have had championships. And now guess what? He got no hardware.
None for him. And not only that, that same year, he got caught doing all kind of illegal stuff where he couldn't coach anywhere in the country.
Shocker.
And still can't.
So you got none. See what you get? See what you get? You see? Not good. That's it. This area is like we manifest.
Absolutely.
And manifest, our manifest fuel. Marn gets mad at me all the time. She's like, you can't, you know, that's not. I'm like, no. Don't you tell me my manifest fuel. My manifest fuel. You think bright, think positive.
Right.
Right? Every once in a while, you need that certain person. Just go just a little. You're my manifest spark plug.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, I will think how I'm going to better my life and do that. But you need an antagonist. Yep.
Absolutely.
Right, my friend? Yeah. Like, you need someone to poke just enough to go.
You need it, yeah. I mean, you always try to find that fuel anyway, and that was everything I needed.
So you're in the NBA, drafted by the 76ers.
Right. It's funny how that went, too.
Explain to A.
It's weird how I even got drafted by them, because I was agent shopping at the time. You know, I was... You know, agents was flying me out different cities, and they just so happened to fly me to Philly. The agent was based out of Philadelphia, and, you know, working out, and, you know, he introduced me to people there. And he takes me to a 76ers practice, and I was projected to be a lottery pick. The Sixers did not have a lottery pick. So I go in, and he introduces me to Larry Brown, who's the head coach of the 76ers. And we sat down and we talked for like an hour.
He cut it up.
Not about basketball at all. We didn't talk about basketball once.
Smart.
All we was just, you know, talking about life and where I was from and, you know, how I wanted to go to North Carolina. It was like one of the two schools in the country that didn't recruit me. So it was just like everything other than, you know, me being drafted. And at the end of the conversation, he was like, man, I really wish we had an opportunity to draft you, but we pretty sure that you'll be gone by the time we get this pick. And the reason why I say it's weird, because I never thought that I would be getting drafted by the 76ers, because I was invited to the draft. And they only invite you to the draft unless you're projected to be a lottery pick. So I was the last person in the green room, and it was crazy because once I left Philadelphia, right? When I left Philadelphia, it was my agent's like, man, I don't know what you said to Larry Brown, man. They've been knocking on teams' doors trying to move up to draft you. And I said, really? He was like, I don't know what you said. I was like, I don't either. But
I told him I'm terrified of my mama. I told him I'm scared shitless of my mama.
So he, you know, they was trying to get me and trying to get me. And you know, one of the things I learned earlier, the reason why I dropped in the draft, because I have sickle cell traits.
But you don't have, you just have the traits.
I just have the traits, and whatever idiot that was doing all the research on me didn't know it was just a trait. So, you know.
Really?
So in the NBA, you know, when I didn't go lottery, now other teams like, what's wrong with him? Like, it's got to be something wrong. Like why haven't anyone
picked him up?
What a witch
hunt at that point, right? It turns into like a witch hunt. Like,
and it was horrifying. Because I'm sitting here like I've left school early. I'm projected to be a lottery pick, and I'm the only person in this room.
That's why you're going.
Yeah.
And I'm
shit,
looking
that
at
that guy's gone too already.
And I'm looking at my agent like, "What the hell? What the hell is going on here?" Like it was. I think I sweat my suit out that night.
I went and had a steak the other day. I sweat my clothes out. I couldn't imagine. They were like, "Holy crap!" So. You're literally like an Aaron Rodgers in a sense. You're sitting there by yourself.
Only one in the green room. I'm just sitting there.
Cameras on you?
And it was so nerve-wracking because I had only worked out for the lottery teams. So all the other teams I hadn't, like I was like, nah, why am I working out for them? Never worked out for any of the other teams.
I was at that stage too in life too. I'm like, you need to see me. You know what I'm capable of. I'll be gone way before you anyway. Oh, you are.
And the funny thing to the story is that I just so happened to be in Philadelphia to talk with Larry Brown. And all the teams had passed me by because they thought something was wrong. And the Hawks had a pick and they called the Hawks like, listen, draft Jermaine. We'll work out the details later. And that's how I ended up being drafted, number 27.
So you were drafted by the Hawks.
By the Hawks.
And then they traded you immediately.
Yeah, immediately.
Did you know that was coming?
I had no clue that was coming because my best friend is Dion Glover. The Hawks had already drafted him.
Uh-huh.
He went to Georgia Tech.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was excited. I never knew that the Sixers had already told them to draft me and they was going to work out the logistics. So I didn't know that part.
So you really thought you were going to
I really
so
like,
thought. This is gonna be the
I was like, yeah, let's go, Dion.
And you're like, shit.
As soon as I get in the back, they was like, well, you know, you don't have to wear the hat because the Sixers going to get you. So here's your Sixer hat. And I was like, what? I was like, okay. All right. Long as somebody wants me.
I'll go to the Timberwolves. I don't give
right,
a
right.
Just, get the Timberwolves.
Just draft me in the first round. That's
please.
It. So, you know, the first round, that's guaranteed 3 years. So if I didn't make the first round, then I would have to try out for the team.
That's it. So skin of your teeth.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Like what? Like a and you're 19 years old.
Yeah, 19
Jesus,
years.
Man, that's a lot of pressure, man.
That was a lot.
Like not to mention the emotion and stuff running through you. Like
yeah.
It's got to be. Is the baby born at this point?
No.
Oh my god! I can see you being like, why? And you just go, I gotta hang on to my hatred of that man
right.
that told me I'm gonna. God, please make my hatred right. true. I am not gonna do any type of garbage. What was it, selling a bag of garbage? Wait, screw you!
Pumping gas.
I can't remember. I knew it was something horrible. I was told by a Navy recruiter I should get a job throwing trash. With my GPA. And I was like, Jesus, I got woken up. Hello? Yeah, this is Sergeant blah, blah, blah. I'm looking at your high school transcripts. Boy, you better join the Army or you should be throwing trash. And I was like, who? Who is this? Like,
that's
yeah,
crazy.
Awful. Oh, yeah, I didn't go in the Army or the Navy. Good for you. Good for you. So you get drafted by the 76ers. You're like, the Hawks. Right. The Eagles, the Hawks. And then they're like, nah, don't put on the hat. Put this one on. You're like, oh my.
Like, what?
What happens next?
Well, normally the next day you go into the city and, you know, you do the sign, you hold up the jersey and all that kind of stuff. So I had to go through that process, which was pretty fun for a 19-year-old kid. to know that he's came into some money.
I'm sure.
To be able to, you know, take care of my family. So that was one thing too. You know, I just wanted to play at the highest level. It wasn't really about the money. Like, money never really moved me much. You know, like when I was being recruited by every team in the country going to college except for Georgia Tech and North Carolina, which they had good reason because Matt Harper was at Georgia Tech and Antoine Jameson was at North Carolina, both guys that played 10 plus years in the NBA. So they had every right not to recruit me, but every school I went to had suitcases waiting on me when I went to go visit. And I chose University of Georgia of the simple fact that Tubby Smith was there and he was like, listen, we're the University of Georgia. We don't pay people to come to school here. And I was intrigued. I said, I like him. Because I was always taught by my aunt, we had to earn everything. Nothing was ever given.
So it's like just like Blue Chips. Absolutely. Just like the movie.
Yep.
You show up and there's a tractor.
So all this money been going on.
I told you, I had a friend that played volleyball for a school, and she used to tell me, she's like, yeah, and female, like ladies volleyball. Yeah. Like, and she would tell me years ago, and she's like, yeah, once a week we'd go in, there'd be a little envelope in our volleyball. Like, she's like, yeah. She's like, imagine what the
yeah.
She's like, they're doing okay.
I used to love the handshakes. I used to try to shake all the hands.
The green handshakes? There's
always something.
There's always something.
Always something in it.
It's like an Easter egg hunt. It's like, well, I just love finding all the Easter eggs.
I just couldn't wait to leave to see how much it was.
It's like, you gotta know when to hold them. You can't look in your palm, know when to fold them.
Like, I wonder which one gave me that one. I need to remember him.
They don't wrap their card in it? No.
They roll it up and make it small and
hey, here you go, boy. Love to see you. You're gonna give us a good game this year, right? You're gonna play hard for you, huh? You're gonna play hard for us, son. You're gonna play good and hard.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir. Join us next week for part two of our interview with Jermaine Jones, where we talk about his NBA career and playing with some of his favorite teammates, which include Allen Iverson and Kobe Bryant.